Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Red Men Weekly podcast. I'm Steve Hoare. Hope you're all doing well. This is the show where we bring you the best clips from this week's Red Men Plus content. All of these shows that you're about to hear clips from are available in full over on redmenplus.com. Red Men Plus is our subscription service. It's like what you get on here, but you get more of it, and there's loads and loads and loads of boss stuff over there. If you want to check it all out, if you sign up to redmenplus.com, as a monthly subscriber, use the code weekly when you do so, weekly, you'll get 50% off your first 2 monthly payments. So go and check it out. There's no limited, like, what's the word, there's no maximum sign up fees, any of that kind of stuff, no terms. You have to be signed up for a certain amount of time. You can sign up for a month. If you don't like it, cancel it. You'll get the rest of that month, and then you won't get charged ever again. So go and check it out, use that code, check it out for yourselves and see if you like it. I'm sure you will. Right then, let's get underway. First up this week, it's the Biased Football Podcast. It was Chris, it was Chloe, and it was Dan Club in for this one, and they had a little speak about the title challengers. Who are the title challengers post Liverpool's draw at Luton, everything that won at the weekend with Arsenal losing at Newcastle? Who actually could win the Premier League title?
I know that at some point, if Liverpool are to be in a title race, I'm gonna have to care about absolutely everything Manchester City do. But I remember years ago, even last season, I'd probably watch every Manchester City game. Now, if I look at their fixtures and I see Manchester United be a bottom-half team, no, I'm just not even clicking it. I'm not watching it. I'm not putting myself through it. There will be a time, hopefully, where I need to do that.
I'd like to, yeah. Haaland was so injured at Dortmund as well, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Like, he was so injured, and now he's just not.
Yeah. Amazing what unlimited funds and no morals will do for footballers. We move on then. We're going to have a little look at the table, but before we look at the table, I wanted to look at the fixtures. Obviously, Tottenham, Chelsea tonight at Tottenham, isn't it?
Yeah.
Saturday, Tottenham away at Wolves, Arsenal at home to Burnley, Manchester United host Luton Town.
Fuck me.
Sunday, Liverpool, Brentford, and Chelsea at home to Manchester City before the international break. There's nothing there really. Only Chelsea City is probably the one where you think, oh, that might go in our favour.
Wolves,
because
Spurs, if VAR actually want to help Wolves out instead this time.
Wolves, Spurs at Molineux gives Wolves, because Wolves have been okay this season. The results haven't really reflected how well they've played at times, to be fair. They've done well in a lot of games. And all up Chelsea, isn't it, for the next 8 days? Like, it's all on them. Like, from being a laughing stock, really, the Premier League, they've got an opportunity to take a couple of big old scalps there and get their own season up and running. But I don't think they'll be... Listen, of course they'll do themselves a favour, but I actually think they'll be doing Liverpool a bigger favour than anybody else if they are to take points off both of them.
Which therefore means they're not going to do anyone any favours, not even themselves.
No, and obviously Tottenham don't have any European football.
No. Yeah.
So they're going into a 12:30 on Saturday after having basically 6 days to recover from it. But yeah, you're right. Chelsea, obviously Tottenham, Chelsea City is the big one. They'll probably get hammered in both of them. Let's have a look at the league table then. Manchester City top, 27 points. Tottenham again back, 26 points. Liverpool and Arsenal both on 24 points. Now, Chloe, we've sat here and spoken at length since the draw against Luton on various different shows about Liverpool's poor game. But at the start of the season, 11 games in, with 3 points behind Manchester City, are you sitting here and telling me you wouldn't have taken that?
No, I 100% would have taken that, especially considering...
Just not the way we've done it.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
You'd rather have drawn the first game of the season.
Like, a draw to Newcastle, I'd have been like, you know what, at St James Park, that's a fine result. You know, Brighton away, I can kind of, like, I thought we were bad on the day, but it's Brighton away, that can happen, they are a good football team. It's the fact that Luton have been battered by everyone but Everton Football Club, and we go there and we play like a team who literally is Luton Football Club. We never, ever got out of a second gear. It looked like none of us could pick each other up and tell each other and drive each other forward. It was the manner in which we've lost and who we've lost to.
It's a shame. Sorry, go on.
Being 3 points off top when you've got to play Manchester City coming up and you can get those 3 points back, hopefully, is really good for me. Like, I can deal with
and
that.
And let's not all forget that I think every one of us thought we'd win that Tottenham game had it not been for the refereeing decision. Yeah. So we would be level on points at Manchester City.
Brighton, that Pascal Gross could have had a red card as well. So...
What I'm trying to get at here, I think Dan's got on to it, is it's been a bit reactionary to the Luton thing. Liverpool have had a very good start to the season.
No, I think you're right, yeah. And, you know, in isolation, that result is a shocker. But when you look at the bigger picture, we had a really good start to the season. That's just not just Premier League, by the way, as well. The Europa League's going swimmingly up till now. You know, qualifications secured, hopefully, on Thursday night, probably as group winners as well, which is another massive thing in all of this. Moving through the League Cup quite serenely, too. Decent draw in that. You know, who knows about the FA Cup last to come, but all in all, given how dire Liverpool's season was at times last year, and given the amount of sort of the ins and outs and the turnover of players this summer, I don't think I could have wished for a better start, really. Especially when you factor in some of the adversity we've had to face, you know, the red cards, the Tottenham goal disallowed, all that type of stuff. And some of the performances have been really quite impressive. The individuals that have come in, we've all been blown away by Szoboszlai, of course. Gravenberch has been brilliant since he arrived. Darwin Núñez is upturning form. Luton, notwithstanding, has been a joy to watch as well. So Van Dijk's returned to his peak of his powers as well. Been brilliant. So we're not imperious by any stretch of imagination, but we're getting there, I would say. And Jurgen Klopp looks bang up for it again as well, which is absolutely massive. So yeah, I'm really positive about where we're at. You mentioned 3 points behind City there. As long as we're in touching distance of Manchester City by the time we play them, but more importantly, by the time sort of Christmas and the new year come around, give me that all day, because January we're going to have a chance to fix any ailments we've got if we want to. And also, we know what we're like when we get to the business end. We've done that before. We can do it. Tottenham haven't. Arsenal faded last year. You know, the other clubs around, I'm not quite sure they've got the power to go and do it. But Liverpool, we know, because we've seen it, can really sort of mix it with the best.
The reason I think we're so reactionary to the Luton loss is just because I didn't expect us to be in a title race. I expected us to be the closest to Manchester City, but I didn't think maybe we had enough to go for the title and really challenge them. And now you're in a situation where you've been dragged into it, and it's like, oh crap, at this moment in time, we are only 3 points off Manchester City. We are in a title race. But that means there is so much pressure on absolutely every point you drop. And every point you drop, once again, now feels like you've lost the league. Sadly, that is just, we've been through it twice before. And because we've been dragged into it, our own team are putting us there, and you want to be there, obviously. But because you're there, a loss to someone like Luton, there is going to be a reaction and maybe an overreaction from people, because you're up against an absolute machine, a giant who just doesn't seem like they give up or like give away 3 points anyway. And that is the problem that you've got there, is that sadly the team that you're up against is so good that every single point dropped feels like it could be the end of your title race.
Yeah, we're not in the title race yet, I don't think, to be honest with you. I don't think that's
what you can believe.
Yeah, hope
you've
and
got,
belief
but
is
this
fine.
Is the thing,
it's
you've
too
got
early
to,
for title race,
yeah,
it?
Yeah, fast, you've got it? To you've got to be there though for this part of the season to be in it. A title race towards the end, anyway.
Yeah,
so you've got to go.
And we are, aren't we?
Yeah, so exactly. Okay. It matters all the way through the season.
Okay, that's fine. The problem Liverpool have got is the away form, shocking. If we are talking about potentially being in a title race, 6 games played, 2-1, 3 drawn, 1 lost.
Yeah.
We've seen. Chloe or Dan, in fact, we've seen Liverpool, when we've drawn games, it's those that have actually cost us the league titles over the course of the season. We've drawn too many games. City either lose or they win. And when you get the win, you get the 3 points. That's three of our draws.
Yeah.
And you've wasted them, you know what I mean? So is that something that you need Liverpool to fix? Or is it still too soon?
I think it's slightly too soon. When you sort of, when you go a little bit deeper into those results, obviously we were fresh off the back of one of them. The Luton one's probably the worst, I would say. But then you factor in the Spurs one, that's probably a harsh defeat, I think it's fair to say. So, yeah. And the Brighton game, we weren't at our best. But I suppose it depends how you want to look at it. We spoke in the originals pod about Liverpool and comparing this Liverpool with last season's. If you want to factor in some of last season, because that was the same problem, our away form last year was horrendous, it really was. So if you want to sort of group it together and say, do Liverpool have a bigger problem, then yes, maybe we do. But in isolation, this squad, I think I can give them a pass on the away form this season personally. And maybe if it carries on, if we, a few weeks down the line after the international break, and we've picked up, you know, a couple of poor results away from home again, there is a discussion there. But I don't see the same sort of shrinking violets that I seen in this Liverpool squad last season. I seen it firsthand on occasion last year. When the going got tough last season away from home, we absolutely crumbled time and time again because we didn't have the backing of Anfield, we didn't like the surroundings, and the opposition were bang up for it. And too often, you know, even the big lads in the team, the leaders of the team went, oh, I'm not sure about this today. For whatever reason, whether it be physically, mentally, the exertions of the year before and the quad and stuff like that, who knows? Too often, away from home last season, we just didn't fancy it. We didn't look up for it. This year, that doesn't look to be the case. Even yesterday, in what was a dismal performance for a large part and a really bad result, we still looked up for me. I'm not saying not one of them lads went, oh no, not for me. They all stood up, they just couldn't quite get it over the line. So I don't have major concerns about the away form yet, but again, if we revisit this at Christmas time, then maybe a different conversation.
I'll just read out the facts and we'll put it on the screen as well if you don't mind. Liverpool have played 5 at home, won all 5, scored 14, conceded 2. Liverpool away from home, played 6, won 2, drawn 3, lost 1, scored 10, conceded 8. It's a bit of a difference. I know it's only a small sample size, but it is a bit of a difference, certainly in the conceding goals column.
Yeah, it is. And I don't know what that... Maybe it's because you're away from home and those fans expect their team with the backing to actually really go for Liverpool. We've had some tough decisions. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, one of them is an own goal by Joel Matip, which, I mean, it just is what it is with that. But Liverpool have
struggled. You're down to 9 men and you're tired.
Yes, exactly.
The game's gone on for about 40 hours.
Yes, VAR's decided to piss you off as well. Look, Liverpool haven't been great away from home, but to be honest, I've not actually genuinely thought about it that much because there are some excuses that I can put my hat on, like, oh, you know, that Spurs game is absolutely not the fault of any of Liverpool's players. It was an unlucky second goal to concede. You come out with a point there and you're absolutely made up. We were seconds away from doing that. I thought against Brighton, we weren't great, but we had chances to win the game. We've not put it in the back of the net. Ryan Gravenberch misses an open goal. They could have been down to 10 men. Even Luton the other day, you've had chances, you've created the chances, you've not put it in the back of the net. It needs to be solved because, once again, it is just, sadly, it is a case of you need to be picking up as many points as possible. I hope that they can put that past them. Because the next away game is Manchester City. If you get into that and you come away with 3 points from that, the confidence that is going to give you, oh my, you should be able to beat anyone away from him after that.
Good time to put it right, isn't it?
Yeah, really. Absolutely. Good time.
Chelsea was the other one. I couldn't think who the other one was. It was that long ago now. It was Chelsea, wasn't it? Early season, wasn't it? Yeah. We were poor that day.
The season as well, isn't it? You just never really know good. What's going to happen. Yeah. That was the best they played all year long, unfortunately.
Thanks to Chris, Chloe and to Dan for that one. Moving on then, J&O Insight Time. It was me, it was Neil Jones. And yes, we had a chat about Curtis Jones, who again has picked up another little injury. He always seems to come at the wrong time for Curtis. Bad luck always seems to strike, whether it's suspensions, injuries at the wrong time. He got poked in the eye once, his back went once. He's had all kinds and now he's got this little minor injury. But yeah, me and Neil had a chat about Curtis Jones and the injury worries that seem to follow him around.
Let's move on then. I want to talk injury news and obviously one of the things from the Luton game was perhaps, I don't know if it was a surprise, but the Curtis Jones missed the game with an injury. And we've spoken about this a couple of times now, but I think it's worth mentioning again in light of this is that Curtis Jones has picked up this really bad habit, and it's not his fault, don't get me wrong, of like, he's always injured at the wrong time, or he's out, he just misses games from nowhere kind of thing. And obviously he couldn't help the suspension was what it was, yeah. But it does feel like whether it's unlucky timing for him, unlucky timing for Liverpool, but I definitely felt like they missed him against Luton.
And it
again, I'm not saying injury prone, he's a young player. There were certain issues that he had with what were related to his growing and things like that. He obviously had a weird eye injury. It just feels like he always gets the hard lines at Reading and Liverpool.
Yeah.
Definitely missed them at the weekend.
I think so. I think they did. Just his ability to be clean and keep the ball, you know, better than the majority did. And, you know, I think Liverpool kept it well at the back and then struggled to keep it in the forward areas or in the advanced areas, didn't he? You know, probably too many of them had off days. I think Gravenberg was probably the only one that you'd look at and say, well, do you know what? He was quite sharp, you know, when he had the ball. I think the others, I mean, Nunes looked sharp, obviously didn't have the end product. Yeah, you're right about Kerr, but unlucky, I suppose, would be the way you'd describe it. You know, obviously a 3-game ban when he was playing particularly well and had the place in the team, didn't he? Sort of not nailed down, but he was definitely in possession of the shirt. I don't think it's a serious injury. I think it was obviously like a knock that he picked up in the Bournemouth game when he thought he played really well again. So with McAllister being out on Sunday, I would wonder whether you wouldn't risk him against Toulouse and sort of have him, you know, give him the time to get ready for Sunday. That might be the way that Liverpool go about it. We'll see. They'll train tomorrow, obviously. There's an open training session early or sort of lunchtime tomorrow. But fingers crossed he can play Brentford or be available for Brentford on Sunday. But you're right, he's one of them that we've seen what happens when he can get a bit of momentum behind him. It's just that he hasn't been able to get a bit of momentum behind him often enough in a Liverpool shirt. And fingers crossed this isn't another period where, you know, you're talking about 3 games missed and then an international break and all of a sudden you're sort of out of rhythm again or having to, you know, come on for 15 minutes in a league games and maybe not show your best or whatever. You know, I think he is an important player for Liverpool if he's fit. I think he's already shown that this season. I think I don't think it was a coincidence that Jürgen spoke about counter-pressing being at 0.0% in the first half against Luton, and I don't think that would have been the case had Curtis been on the pitch. And I don't think it was I think that tells you he was missed, certainly in the squad, but maybe even in the starting 11.
And like I say, a couple of injuries, obviously, remember he had an ankle injury at the start of this year as well. He missed the Bournemouth game, he missed the Newcastle game, and then he was back in. He played 3 really good games. Liverpool's 3 most convincing perhaps performances. I know they went behind against Wolves and West Ham, was a bit tricky at times, but they battered Villa in the end. They were comfortable against Wolves, relatively speaking, in terms of the performance. Whether the result was in doubt, I don't know. Obviously, I took Andy Robertson scoring quite late to win that one. West Ham, I thought he played well again. Yeah. They're probably 3 of the better performances Liverpool have had, and they're the 3 games, they're the 3 league games he started. That probably isn't a coincidence.
Well, and also look at the games he hasn't featured in this season. You know, he didn't feature against Brighton.
Suspended, yeah.
Tottenham obviously went off in the game, and Luton, you know, being them. So
even Chelsea in the home game, he come off the bench.
Yeah, he came off the bench. Yeah, so you know, I'm not saying it's all down to him, but Liverpool have dropped points, so I think he definitely would have come in handy in some of those games. You think of Brighton being a good example, actually. You know, if you think about the way the game was, Brighton sort of really intense, and you're needing a little bit of a calm head and just keep the ball, and obviously being able to do all the off the ball work, I think he would have been more than useful. I think he'd started that Spurs game really well, you know, Liverpool had generally. So yeah, he's one of them that Liverpool are going to be relying on this season, and for that obviously they need him to be fit and available. And you know, fingers crossed, if it's not to lose, you know, it's Brentford.
I was going to say, because if it's not Brentford, and we'll find out in due course, of course, that'll have meaning he won't have played the Premier League game since that Tottenham game. Yeah. That was like late September. Yeah. Obviously, he missed the three with the suspension, then he missed Luton, and then he misses Brentford, and then there's another international break.
And then you've got City after the break. It could
almost be 2 months without the Premier League game. Now, obviously, he has featured in a bit of Europe and a bit of cup games, but like 2 months out of Premier League footy to then go, where's Man City at home? Like, it's not ideal for him.
No, it's not, no. For him, you know, we're talking about Liverpool's perspective. From his point of view, he must have been absolutely chewing when he's been sent off at Spurs. For what it was as well, and I don't understand the rules, and you know,
there's been some similar though, mate, that haven't been red cards recently.
And Destiny Adogie, maybe.
Even Kai Havertz wasn't too, it was a similar kind of thing maybe.
But yeah, you know, to get it, to miss, like you say, the best part of 2 months of football because of something like that, he will have been absolutely spewing with it. But fingers crossed, you know, it's just a one game absence, you know, a little knock that he can overcome and get back into it, because, you know, he's got a part to play for Liverpool in all competitions this season.
Yeah, I was going to say, looking ahead to that game, again, it's who knows if he's even fit, but you mentioned McAllister's suspension there. The obvious thing is to play Endo at number six, but like Jürgen's been resting. He has tried Curtis in that role before. Like it could be a world where he starts as a number six.
Because I wonder whether Brentford, the type of opposition, might dictate an Endo who's a bit, you know, good in the air and a more physical or physically, what's the word? He's more comfortable in the defensive midfield aspect of the game. I know Curtis is good off the ball, but yeah, it's big chance for Endo, isn't it? You know, McAllister, there was a lot of discussion about McAllister and the number six role. I don't think that was the reason Liverpool didn't beat Luton, because they didn't have a defensive midfielder or a defensive minded midfielder. I don't feel that was the problem there. The problem was the quality in possession from not just him but from others. So it would be a big chance for Endo to come into the Premier League. Tough game. Klopp got a lot of respect for Brentford. They're a very specific way of playing. They've always given Liverpool relatively tough games, certainly down there, but even at Anfield. I think it was 1-0 last season, late in the day, late in the campaign. So it's not a team that you're going to sort of go and expect to just run through. You're going to have to work hard for it, and if Endo is the man who gets the chance, then it'll be a good chance for him to stake a bit of a claim as well.
Thanks to Neil for coming in, and yes, let's crack on. Hopefully Curtis can get himself back fit and firing for after the international break. Up next then, it's Expert Insight time. Dan Clubb gets on the phone anytime any news breaks. Dan goes and speaks to the people at the heart of the stories. This time he spoke to journalist Emmanuel Louise, and it's all about Andre. Yes, reports came out earlier in the week that Liverpool maybe don't want him anymore, maybe he's going to Fulham. Well, according to Emmanuel, Andre still wants to move to Liverpool, so yeah, check out what he had to say to Dan.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the MNTB and your latest edition of Transfer Insight. My name is Dan Clubb. I'm delighted to say I'm joined by friend of the show, the brilliant Emmanuel Luiz, Brazilian reporter, of course, our man in the ground in South America. Emmanuel, how are you doing, mate? You okay?
Just fine, Dan. Thank you for having me here. Hi, people. News, we know what we are going to talk about, right?
We know what we're here to talk about. Yeah, there's been a lot going on. We've spoken a few times now, obviously, and all our conversations were about the Copa Libertadores and Andre's going to wait, Fluminense going to wait. They waited, and it was worth the wait. They won the Copa Libertadores. I watched it. Lots of Liverpool fans watched it. It was a very interesting game of football. Andre was brilliant. I've got to say that as well. I thought he was superb, absolutely superb. But since that, there's been more speculation, more talk.
Yes.
Arsenal, Fulham, Liverpool, all of them at the game. What's the latest?
So, I will be loud and clear for you guys. We already talked about 40 million euros release clause, right? And Fulham and Liverpool were in the race. André wanted Liverpool in the middle of the year, right? So it remains really clear. André wants Liverpool. But the most important thing right now, André wants Liverpool, but Fulham, my friend Bruno Andrade here from Brazil, he was saying, and I confirmed that I was talking with some guys from the club, mm-hmm. and they said to me, what? André will play for the club that make the best offer to Fluminense, right? He wants Liverpool, and Liverpool wants to play like 30 million, that amount of price that we are talking, right? In the middle of the year. But what Fulham did? Fulham said to Fluminense, okay, he has a 40 million release clause, right? You guys are not going to renew his contract, make the release clause higher. You guys won't do that. But what we want to do as Fulham, we pay the release clause, but we make you guys like have some add-on clause. I don't know how you guys say that. It's add-on, right? Yeah. So Fluminense said, okay, that's good for us, because if you pay the 40 million release clause and give us some add-on, fantastic, because you guys don't need to do that, you know?
Yeah.
So we are going to inform André. André wants Liverpool, okay? André wants Liverpool. But he's going to talk with Fluminense. What I think will happen, if Liverpool comes right now with 35 for him and 20% release clause, something like that, mm-hmm. Fluminense will sell to Liverpool. Because right now, what Fluminense is doing is showing like gratitude for the players, because André stayed, Nino had a huge offer from Mexico, from Italy, and he stayed our captain. Right now, Fluminense is selling Nino for only 8 million euros to Nottingham Forest. Only. Why? Because he said, man, I want to go to England. You guys have a better offer from Mexico. I think around 13 million euros, okay, from Mexico. Yeah. But I want to go to England. Let me go for 8. And Fluminense said, okay, You stayed with us, so we sell you for that price. So what do I think? If Liverpool somehow improves a little bit the offer, Fluminense will let André go. But Fluminense really want that add-on.
Yeah.
Period. They are not interested to sell for 40. They want to sell like for 30, 35, but add-on.
Yeah.
You know? So I think 35 million... 50%, 20% add-on, it's Liverpool, yeah, right? André wants Liverpool. It still remains the same. And what Arsenal has to do with it? Arsenal, like, they are doing like a little buzzard, you know? They are just looking around. They didn't do nothing until right now. Nothing. So they are looking. Maybe they will say something, maybe not. There was a guy from, I forgot his name right now, but there was a guy from Arsenal that was in Maracanã in the final and was asking things about André. But they did not make any bid, any kind of this. even the player staff are not informed of it.
Yeah.
So right now, Arsenal is a big question mark. What do I know? Okay, and I will tell you right now. There is a guy here in Latin America called Federico Redondo. He's from Argentino Juniors, right? Fluminense is looking at him to be the replacement of André.
Yeah.
But clubs in the Big Six, and then you know how that works. Maybe it's only the manager of the athlete that is saying that, but clubs at the Big Six are looking for Federico Redondo to buy him right now, maybe low on him. And it's going to be a big swap thing, because what they were telling me, if Fluminense sells André, has a big chance of getting Redondo. But clubs like Fulham, Wolverhampton are looking to maybe get Redondo right now. And clubs like Liverpool, Tottenham, in the Big Six, I don't know which club from the Big Six is.
Yeah.
That's why I'm talking about the Big Six. Are looking at him too. So, what I'm feeling, Liverpool is going to hire a center defense midfielder from Brazil.
Yeah.
Right? From Brazil. From South America, sorry. From South America. The biggest three names that we have right now. André, Federico Redondo, and Moscado from Corinthians. Redondo is from Argentino Juniors and Moscado is from Corinthians. André is a world-class player right now. Like, we are talking in Brazil right now that he is going to be the starter from the national team because of Casemiro is out. So he's ready. Yeah. He's European caliber. So Liverpool just needs to improve a little bit of the offer. Mate, let's be honest right now. I think it would be stupid if Liverpool didn't improve.
Yeah.
Because Fluminense waited, and like, they are going to do what André wants.
Thanks to Dan and thanks to Emmanuel for that one. Yeah, that one will continue to rumble on. We'll see if André becomes a Liverpool player, a Fulham player. Does he go anywhere else? It'll all become clearer down the line. Finally then, and we don't have to do too many of these, to be honest, this season, thankfully, because it isn't always the best. It can be a bit of a drag, but it can also be therapeutic. Yes, it's a final word to you after the Liverpool defeat. Liverpool were beaten 3-2, of course, by Toulouse on Thursday in the Europa League. I was joined by Jay Pearson and by John Reid, and we had a big old chat about the disallowed goal from Jarrell Kwanza. Was it a handball? Wasn't it a handball? What is going on with VAR in Europe, in the Premier League, all that kind of stuff? So yeah, check out what we had to say about Liverpool's defeat in France. We got away. I said got away with it. At Luton, we all fought, John. At least we didn't lose. We weren't great there, but we managed to find that equaliser later on. And Liverpool fought in this game, they found the equaliser, but it wasn't to be. So just to clarify what exactly, I'm sure you've all have seen it by now, but Jarrell Kwanza pounces on a loose ball. I think it goes in, takes the flex, and everyone thinks he's scored. There's a VAR check. It appears that the ref gives the goal and then goes back to the screen, and he's disallowed of a handball against Alexis McAllister. There's a lot to unpack. It was about 20 minutes before the actual goal went in. I mean, I'm sure he had his Argentina kit on from the World Cup final. That's how far back it was in terms. It was mad. Like, it bounces up off him, it kind of deflects up of him, it's the upper arm. Liverpool play, they half clear it, they get ahead on it. VAR has been in the news a lot recently, and most of it's been for the wrong reasons. Everyone says to me about, like, you know, English referees, the standard English referees are bad. Well, I've watched a couple of European games this week where it's not been much better. The handball decisions in the Man United game the other day, both of them were just like, what is this? I don't know if it's a VAR thing, a officials thing. Is the handball rule just crap? Does anyone know what the handball rule is? I don't, whatever it is, I just can't figure out a logical reason why the laws can disallow a goal 15 seconds earlier for a ball bouncing off a lad's chest onto the top of his arm. It just all felt a bit wrong.
It did, and you've nailed it there. Like, you know, I'd have more truck with it if it sort of bounced and he hit it with his hand. It didn't. It went up his chest. He rolled it up his chest, and it doesn't even really go onto his arm. It just sort of hits his shoulder. You know what I mean? And he controls it. You know, it was just such a weird turn of events, and
as you say with the ref, you know, they don't help themselves, do they? And I feel for him in a sense, because I think, you know, he'd let, we were talking about Endo earlier, I think he'd let a lot go and sort of been like, I want to try and keep it, the game flowing, but it's not a good look, is it, when you give a goal and go to restart a game? And I think a lot of the players call him up on that as well at the end. He goes to restart a game and then he suddenly goes, oh, hang on a minute, and runs off again and goes, actually, no, I've changed my mind. It was weird, and you know, all the stuff, you know, I'm grateful to whoever it is every time after this happens, because it's happening a lot lately. The person who finds the rule from the rule book for me and screenshots it and puts it on social media so we all know exactly why it's wrong. But, you know, you think he's got a, or, you know, at least have a word in his ear, you know what I mean? Like, you know, someone, if they are on VAR watching that and going, oh, it's handball, someone's surely got to be checking that, or at least in his ear saying to him, listen, there might be something wrong here, and they've now scored. Just keep everyone calm for a minute. And that didn't, you didn't really get a sense of that. It was just, it looked like a goal, and then all of a sudden it was like, hang on a minute, all right, well, they're checking it. And then it was like, actually, it was something that happened, as you say, 3 years ago, like in the build up
it's also weird. Jay, like, we play the same sport, Liverpool play the same sport in Europe and in domestically, and the handball rules different in both competitions. They're playing the exact same game, and yet the rules different in England. It probably isn't handball, but UEFA are more strict with it. Their guidance says, like, I've seen a lot of people say things about, like, where it bounces up and hits him and all this, the arm isn't away from the body. I think UEFA's horrendously strict laws, that might actually be an handball, but by the way they want it. But if that was in England, it probably wouldn't be given. They'd either said it was too long ago, they'd either said it bounced up off him. How can you be playing the same sport in two different competitions with two completely different handball rules? It's baffling. Surely IFAB, who run footy officiating, they tell you the rules and they're the rules. How can you interpret the rules or enforce the rules differently for the exact same player in two different competitions? That's baffling to me.
It is baffling, and I don't get it myself. And I think there's a lot of influence wherever you're playing football. So, for example, when you look at a handball in England, it gets scrutinised by the media, social media, everything that then will play on the minds of the referees and stuff like that. So that's where I think that effect of whatever country you're in, it will affect the game, because there's like, oh, well, if I don't make that decision, but if I do make that decision, then that pressure is going to go. And we did just have an incident last week. Maybe I should let that go a little bit. That plays into the game. It certainly does. In Europe, you look back to the Champions League final when we got the handball decision for the penalty. You know, some people would say that wasn't handball. Some people say it was. Again, it makes no sense for IFAB. Where I stand on that from last night, I'm going to play a bit of devil's advocate here. I actually wasn't surprised.
And when I saw wasn't the replay, that angry. I do think it's probably an handball, because his arm's over here and it bounced. It's more, I don't know, it's like, it is so far after the, it's so far
it
removed.
It is, but if you think about it, Steve, if his arm isn't in that position when it's out, then, and it's down here and just hits him, then the play carries on, ignored. But because his arm's out in this unnatural position where he's in the middle of the park, there's no players around, it is a bit off. So I'm looking at that part. Directly from that, from when he controls it, the next pass is allowed to play the ball into the box, which then leads to
a scramble.
Everything. Yeah. And it leads to the goal. So yeah, it can be 10 seconds or less. I think it was less than 10 seconds from the time it hit his hand or whatever. So for me, I'm looking at it going, I'm watching that and going, if he goes to VAR now, it's getting disallowed. Because if I was on the other receiving end of that, I'd be screaming, going, that's on ball, that's on ball, that's on ball, and rightly applauding the decision.
I suppose, Jay,
I would.
Yeah, it's one of them. I know,
I'm not angry with it. I just think the right decision, it was the right decision in the end.
I suppose the question becomes,
I'm
John,
like, RIP.
No, Jay, listen, you're not the only person. It all comes from whether you think it's a deliberate handball or an accidental handball.
That's the difference, absolutely. It's definitely not deliberate.
Accidental handball that leads to a team who's scoring a goal or having a goal scoring opportunity will no longer be considered an offence. So they've deemed that as that he means to handball that, and that is open to interpretation. I think if you think he means to handball it, then it's handball. But that's the debate, isn't it? They've given it for a deliberate handball, not an accidental handball, John. It's mad. There's three of us all sat here. Jay thinks it might be handball. Probably is. You probably think it's not. I'm not sure. I think it might be a new phase of play. Jay doesn't.
No, but it's mad, isn't it?
We're all footy fans, and I watch Liverpool every week. I watch so much football. It's my job. I have to watch it. I watch as much as I can. And I still can't tell you what the handball rule is definitively. I couldn't sit there and go, that's handball. The ones in the Man United Copenhagen game, I don't think either of them are handballs. But then you go to the laws and you go, well, actually, it might actually be.
but maybe it isn't because you're determining intent, you're determining closeness to the opponent. There's so much to consider. It just feels like VARJ has got to a point where football rules weren't meant to be as scrutinised as VAR makes them, and that's offside. There's no such thing as level anymore. You can't, level's gone. So if level was in the, it doesn't exist. You can't be level anymore because the lines make it impossible. The VAR doing the slowing down and everything about it, it just feels like football's laws that were written so long ago haven't quite matched up, because no one knows what fucking handball is. And you look at a screen and you've got three lads here, you've all got three different opinions. You watch footy every week, and then you've got pundits going, yeah, that's handball. No, it's not. Ex-players. We're in a position now where no one knows what the flinging rule is.
No, they don't. And it's the system, I come back to it all the time with VAR. The system's fine. VAR works.
It does.
It's not that, as you say, it's the rules. And it's the first thing I thought last night when I seen it was, you see it from the angle we all saw it from, and you're probably the ref as well. Nah, it's not handball. And then you see it from the other angle they've got where it's side on. Oh, actually. And it's like the thing what happened with the, it happened in the World Cup, and it happened last week as well, you know, with the ball going out of play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you see it from one angle and you're like, nah, it's out. And then you see it, oh, actually. And the game, obviously, as you say, was never meant to be played that way, and these rules weren't, and it's highlighting that the fallacy of this, but it's meant to clear things up, isn't it? It's meant to be definitive, and that's where I think, at least with offside, you know, I'm opening a can of, you know, a can of worms because of this season, but where at least with offside, you can go, it's either it is or it isn't. Things like that are so open to interpretation, and it's like, you know, for me, part of the reason I don't think it's a handball is I think, well, you know, he's in the middle of turning. You know what I mean? So he's going to have his arm out for balance. Do you know what I mean? And like, if it hits his arm, you're saying, like, in terms of like deliberate handball and reading the rules, actually, is it? You know, like, if it hits his arm and they said, all right, if it touches your arm, it's handball, I'd be like, all right, fine. But that's not what the rule says. You know, it's like, there's such a grey area in it. And like, the more they try and add to it, just to make it clear, they keep adding layers of it, which just add layers of interpretation. And really, it should just be, look, if it does this, handball. If it doesn't, no.
It's mad. That is mad. The two referees could see the rule, Jay, and they can interpret it different. There's probably a problem with the rule there. I don't know. I think sometimes, right, I think that the Premier League have actually made it might be the way around where this is handball everywhere else and not in the Premier League. I don't know. But for someone who's used to watching Liverpool in the Premier League every week, it's hard to get your heads around. Listen, I will say this. To lose deserves to win, and Liverpool would have got away with one after that goal going in. But it could have been a great moment for Kwanzaa. It could have been another one of those things where we just said before about mentality. Fucking hell, they never give up. The mentality thing, they don't give up. They try to the end, which is what the best Liverpool teams on the club have done. And to be fair, this shouldn't really change that because we saw that they did. But it's hard to swallow when a referee points at the ground and you think you've scored and then he hasn't. So this season we've been given a goal and either taken off us, and we've had an official who's given us a goal, but the other official never knew we'd been given a goal, so we didn't get the goal.
Yeah,
it's all of it. Like, yeah, it's not great from a spectator point of view to know what the fuck's going on, because the Diaz thing and then this one, that it's when you've got one guy pointing at the floor and saying goal, and then his mate actually goes no, come back again. That doesn't give you confidence in the officials.
Not at all, mate. Take me back to the 90s when football was a bit easier.
Well, I was saying this the other day, right?
Just take me back. I know it was shit, but Jesus Christ, I wasn't.
I
you know.
I think at some point we've got to accept either if VAR's here, it's got to get better. Was when we were moaning about decisions in the past, and we were like, they need help. Were we wrong as the shark? You know, we jumped the shark here or whatever it is? Because I watched that game against Bournemouth the other day, and we knew knowing there was no VAR, you just knew the goal wasn't going to be the Slava. You could just celebrate.
Yeah,
because you knew straight away, and that might be a good thing. Now, if one would have went against us in that game, and you were like, for fuck's sake, that's offside, and we haven't got VAR, that's where it gets a bit complicated. But I don't know, it's like,
we've slowed down celebrating now. Even at home, we're like, oh, it's a goal. Yeah, I'll wait a minute. Get in!
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's just the delay's gone,
sucking it out a bit. But
for me, what are you on VAR, Jay? I'll go man, and I'll give you guys your chance to say as well. I think VAR should stay. I think it needs to be, definitely use the get rid of the offside thing and use the automated ones, because that just works. It's quicker for a start. And if you can't decide within 30 seconds if it's an error, have a timer on it. And if you have, then it wasn't an error. It can't be the clear and obvious thing that they keep telling us.
Yeah.
In cricket, they have umpire's call, where if it was close, you stick with the fella who made the decision on the field. At this moment in time, you can, it takes two, three, four, 5 minutes. We saw that Newcastle against Arsenal the other day, 6 minutes or something to the side, this, and this. Therefore, if it takes that long, it wasn't an obvious error, just go with it. But it does feel like it's sucking the fun out of it a little bit now. Like, I don't think any Toulouse fan would have moaned too much if that goal had gone in. He might have been bored. It was ages ago. It's doughty. The ref didn't see it. We move on with it.
Yeah.
If he'd have punched it in like fucking Diego Maradona, then fair enough. But I don't know. It just feels like we're at a point with it now where it is impacting people's enjoyment of the sport. I don't think that can be disputed now.
No, I agree. I agree with you, mate. VAR's here to stay, and I agree with it, because there's been plenty of times in the world where we've been unfairly, you know, we haven't got the right decision without VAR.
But an absolute stinker, that's the difference. Sterling offside at Man City when he's miles there onside. Yeah. They're the stinkers that it can just go, yep, sound done. Obvious ones.
Yeah.
I think at the point now where you're drawing this and you're zooming in on that, is that ball in or out? I think it is taking something away.
Yeah, it is. And with the Arsenal thing as well, the ball was out of play. Come on. And then even with our goal against City, you know, with the 11 millimetre thing again, it's here to stay. We John's nailed it before. It's not the technology, it's the people running it. And when you've got three people interpreting different things, well, I think this and I think that, and there's bias when it comes into it, there just needs to be clear rules. Now, all these incidences have to happen in the first 10 years of us having VAR for the next 10 years to be a lot more cleaner and a lot more easier. So it's like, well, do you remember when that happened against Arsenal Newcastle when the ball went out? Right, well, that's the decision we now make. If it looks like that from that angle, forget perspective and Gary Neville with his camera above it and the arse end of the ball is over the line, this, that, the other. No, if the ball's out, it's done. You know what I mean? All these incidents with VAR have to happen in the first few years for us to realise and go, well, that's how you learn. And that's how we're doing everything. You know, when we're doing Red Men shows, certain things have to go wrong for you to go, right, well, we've learnt from that now, we don't do that. You know, the things that we do on Red Men are,
mate, there's certain guests who haven't come back.
There you go.
Let's put it that way.
That's what I'm saying. So I think in 10 years time we'll be having another conversation going, do you remember how fucking shit VAR was at the beginning, but they've got it absolutely spot on now? Hawkeye wasn't the best in tennis when it first started, but it's fucking brilliant now.
Yeah, I hope so.
Same with Super League, they get it right all the time. Yes, it's a little bit longer because you've got to look at ground and there's like 50 different pairs of legs underneath the ball, but they get it right.
Yeah, hopefully, fingers crossed they can. But it's worth mentioning, John, like we have gone through it all, and they would have been lucky. But if you were looking at that game, if it was a boxing match, the right team got the decision. It felt like, lose, they were better than Liverpool on the night, and the right team won.
Congratulations. Yeah, they did. They deserved it, and you know, fair play to them. I mean, they were good when they come to Anfield.
Very
even
good.
Though, even though obviously we ended up putting fire past them, yeah. But they definitely deserved it, and they were honest. You know, it wasn't as if like it was three fluky goals. They worked hard, and they had a plan, and they stuck to it. So, you know, you don't want to take anything away from them. I think they more than deserved the win, but it's just, you know, it's the cleats becoming the tagline of the season, and Sky need to get it on. I think at some point that, you know, we're sat here talking about refereeing again. It's just the thing, isn't it? I just, you know, we were saying a couple of years ago when this all first happened, VAR, you know, I was like, it should just be a 10-second thing. If you can't, well, exactly what you've just said, if you can't do it within a set time frame, you just move on and forget it. And if they can't get the footage together, it doesn't matter, you move on. I think the other thing for me that's really annoyed me with it, but particularly with this game as well, is this whole thing about re-reffing, which I can't remember what it was, but someone on commentary picked it up. But it's like, let the guy on the pitch run the game. Like, you can call him over and go, blah, 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 and he can go, right. But if he's give it and just gone, you know, like, nah, it's standing. But like, let him have that power, because I feel as if they're going to the screen and, you know, to the thing of, he's going to the screen, oh, I've made a mistake, great, I've got to be seen to be going what they've said. No, like, if you know, like, I've the tenacity, I'd prefer him, as you say, to come out at the end and say, actually, I went with it because I didn't think it was that bad, and, you know, in real time it didn't look that bad, and I've seen it back and I still think it was a marginal call. But you don't get enough of that, and I think, you know, there's a lot of talk about referees explaining decisions. I think we should also have a thing about, like, we need to empower them to be on the pitch to be able to say, actually, no, I'm sticking with my decision, and we don't need 5 minutes of you checking it. I know what I saw and I'm doing that.
Be interesting to see the stats of that, how many times the ref's gone to the screen and stuck with the original
once, thing. I remember once I go away at Fulham when the VAR sent, I think it was Andre Maddon, over to check an handball against Fabinho, and he stuck with his, he was like, no, it's not handball, give the corner. That's the only time off the top of my head I can think of happening in Liverpool.
Bollocks,
I might be wrong.
Bollocks.
Yeah, I just don't know where we're at with it. Thank you to Jay for coming in. Thank you to John for coming in. And thank you for you guys for listening to this episode of the Redmen Weekly Podcast. Like I say, check out every single show in full, plus loads, loads, loads more after every game, including the Instamatch reaction. We have the player ratings show. We have tons and tons of content over there, both in video and in podcast form. You can download them into your app so you can watch them on your tablets or whatever you want to do with it. It's all there for you, redmenplus.com. Use that code weekly and get 50% off your first 2 monthly payments. Right. Thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back with another Redmen Weekly next Friday. See you all then.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.